everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Equidemia's Science for the Equestrian Soul podcast. This is me. My name is Selina Skogan. I am your host. And today I am talking to Bent Branderup. Bent Branderup is a master in the academic art of riding. He's the founder of the Academic Art of Riding, as we know nowadays. He's my very beloved teacher since many, many years. And we are talking about the perspectives, different perspectives on groundwork. We are talking about how groundwork developed the way we know it nowadays and what the benefits are. I hope you have as much fun listening to the podcast as I had recording it. And if you enjoyed it, listen to the end. We have a little surprise for you.
Good morning to a new episode of my podcast. Today we have not Katrin Branderup like it's standing in the picture. We have Bent Branderup.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. And
hey, Katrin, this
the hair,
morning.
The hair, exactly. I think Katrin has a nicer hair.
Yeah.
And we are planning to talk academic groundworks this morning. Good morning, Bent.
Good morning.
Good morning to Denmark, Norway. It's so strange, crazy how this is so easy working online today. Bent, I'm knowing you now since many years, and what caught me in the academic art of writing very early on when I was sitting, you know, in the audience, not being a student yet, just sitting in the audience and watching you working with my horses, with your horses, was always the beauty of communication in between you and your ponies and this extremely calm and relaxing atmosphere in your riding arena. So that it was always, you know, it felt like you were going into a safe space and you could sit there in the audience with your coffee cup and just enjoying watching the communication in between you and your horses, whatever level it was on, was really nice. And I think that is now, I'm not saying how old I am. So I was 15 or 16 when I was sitting in your arena first in Hamburg. So that's many, many years ago. And it's still developing. And today I would like to take our audience a little bit into this journey with us, how the Academic Art of Riding has developed over the years, how your journey was, because it was, wow, so many things happening. So let's start at the start. I mean, you did not start where you are today. You did not start as a riding master.
No, no. So you know the way of saying the master has failed more often than the beginner have ever tried. And I've done that for many, many years with try and error and finding out what are the best ways to do it. But of course, first I was a product of my teachers. So my different teachers, of course, also work from the ground in different ways. And one of the first thing I changed myself was to take away the fixed reins and any kind of artificial reins. So all my teacher used, for example, fixed reins. And that was where I said, the head should not be placed by a pair of reins or hands. The head should be placed by bones, muscles, fascia. All these structures are meant for doing it. So why do we try to force it? Why can the horse not place its head itself? It does when it runs around. And I discovered when I took the fixed reins away that the bending and stelling didn't come from making the inside fixed rein shorter, but from having a well forward stepping inside hindfoot. Discovering why I disliked...
Let's connect again where you're starting to talk about... You were taking away the fixed reins. That was the first thing that yes. You did when you started experimenting.
Yes. And because I thought, why do we need some reins to place the head? Horses can perfectly place their heads themselves with bones, muscles, binding tissues, fascia, and so on. That's what places heads. Why do we need these fixed reins? And I discovered that instead of having the standing and bending by making the inside fixed rein shorter, I got it by bringing the inside hind foot forward. which then became the essence for me of a shoulder in, and the reason why I dislike the leg yielding that doesn't give me that place of the head. So by saying, can we do it without all this equipment, that also developed the way to say, how do I want that exercise to be? Yeah, I do this exercise because then I get this result. And that was one of the first things in discovering how that the fixed reins could be taken away. And even one of my teachers from Neindorf accepted that I didn't want to work with fixed reins. So I was allowed when I was there to take them off the horses and work them without. And then it kind of developed little by little that things got okay. And then I got a new idea and saying, but why can't we? So for example, when you work on the lawns, you have inside aids, but sometimes you need an outside frame. When I worked with Salvador Sanchez, we had a picadero that was round. So we kind of launched up against the wall. And when you gave the rein, the head was looking into the wall and the horse stopped itself. So when launching free, I said, but how can we replace the outside wall? And there the journey started to, for example, understanding what is an outside leg and how can we frame the horse even from the outside, outside rein, outside leg, and just with a signal of the whip. And that was one of the important steps on the way, that we suddenly did not only have inside aids, bringing an inside hind foot forward, and making a circle bigger, inside rein, taking the shoulder on a bigger circle, inside leg, making the whole horse do the circle bigger, but also outside rein, taking the shoulder in again without losing bending and standing. That when I, in the beginning, showed the whip to the outside, many horses rebended and said, I know an inside leg, so this must be a new inside leg. And until we found ways to explain the horse what an outside leg were. And there are still old educational films from me where I got an idea that I, after first years afterwards, discovered it was wrong. I discovered when I bended a horse and took the front to the wall, the hind quarter came off the wall. And then I thought I had a quarter in. Unfortunately, no, in most cases, then you have a shoulder out, which is not the same thing. So therefore, it required an outside rein to take the shoulder off the wall, that the horse was not hanging on the outside front leg. So every time I got to the decision, this is quite good, I continued from there, and then coming to the next step and saying, yes, but not good enough.
And that is this process where you said it was try and error, and then you are finding out the next step.
Yes, and also standing with a problem and seeing how can this be solved. Of course, one of the most important way is to understand that no horse can understand any aid from nature. Every aid has to be taught to the horse. And this is also the reason why I'm very disagreeing with scientifically way of saying how unintelligent a horse is. No horses can understand more aids than there are letters in the Latin alphabet. So I don't believe in that way of saying it. We just measure the wrong way. After
yeah, I agree with you. And there's actually a lot of recent science that is more supporting your perspective.
Yeah. But that's one thing. Epileptic. You must also see, when I look into science, I have seen so many scientifically new ideas coming up where I, as a horse person, could say, I don't agree, or saying, interesting, but work onto it. For example, when genetic came up, you thought you got equal much genetic from mother and father. But when you make a mule, and you take the mother as a horse and the donkey as the father, you get a complete different animal when you do it the opposite way around. So that could not be true, I said, as a horse breeder.
As a breeder.
Yes, because at that time they didn't know the mitochondrial DNA. And that's with everything that comes up scientifically. In the beginning, when a new science comes up, you have just the top of an ice mountain. Most of it is underwater, and it comes later. And so it's, of course, a development like this also with the groundwork, that Getting an idea is like seeing the top of an ice mountain. You have no idea how big it is down there. Yes, mathematically, you could without ice mountain see it, but in this case, it's just a journey that is the interesting part of it. And it's so exciting to find new details and add to it.
Now we are cantering a little bit away here, so I'm trying
Yes,
to
sorry.
frame us a bit. You have been just shortly mentioning Egon von Nieuwendorf and Salvador Sanchez, and I know that you have been traveling a lot for your own education, and there's not
Yes.
so much that you haven't done with horses, from riding over Iceland to riding at the Spanish, riding in Spain, what's higher
At
schools
the
and Egon
Royal
von Nieuwendorf.
Andalusian School, yes, Escuela
Yes.
Andaluza de Arte Ecuestre in Jerez la Frontera, where I really changed my journey because before that I was educating myself as an ethno as a ethnology, as a history museum work I did. And I was interested in horse cultures. So that was my goal until I met Don Javier, who was my very beloved teacher at the school in Jerez. And that was when I discovered the art of riding is what I would dedicate my life to.
Was that the first time you came in touch with an education, just a kind of education from the ground? Was that significantly different there, the upbuild?
Yeah, no, so even in my childhood, there were normal dancing in the fields when they have plowed the fields, we longed the horse on them to get them tired, so we dared to mount the youngsters. It was a little primitive, but there have been this kind of culture, of course. We in Denmark are very close to what you would also know earlier in Germany, but on a basic level. So there it got a little higher, where we also had work where the Piaf was developed as well next to the wall, as also in the pilers. Especially Oliveira was working in the pilers. In Jerez, it was rather using the pilers for the show afterwards when the horse was already educated, and so was von Nieuwendorf. But Oliveira was using the pilers for education, and Luis Valenza.
What is the difference, right? If you are having a completely educated horse, you put it in between the pilers. It's for the show. It's the horse isn't learning anything. It's showing what it has learned.
Yes.
Or if you are going through educational steps, it's a significant difference.
Yes, of course. That the first the horse must learn to stand there, being brought there, just being there, and then you ask it to step from side to side, that the horse learns where the movability is limited.
And you said something else there. What is also very interesting, because this is also my experience and my journey, and I see it in many students. And recently, I talked with somebody coming from a FAE system. You said the longing was very primitive, and what Eliza told me is that still in her bubble today, longing is not taught. It's first taught to the riders or to the teachers on a very high level, so on Grand Prix level or something. But the
Yeah.
basic people are still not learning how to launch a horse. That was the same for me when I started at a riding school. I got a horse in my hand. Eventually, I became a better rider, and eventually, I was supposed to teach new beginners, and I had never been launched before. So I got a whip in my hand and a horse in the other. I said, the student is coming in 5 minutes, launch her. Okay, how does this horse go round? So where did you get the idea that we need to teach a horse how to walk on the launch line? That we cannot just push it out, but really that there's a pedagogical process behind.
Yes, already in Jerez, we were having the launching for the education of the seat of the rider. But then the riders were educated on well-educated horses on the launch. And then we had the launching for the youngsters learning the launching. And that launching was, of course, basically for that the horse knew some basic aids and the beginning without a rider on and later with a rider on. And I got the idea that why should we be satisfied with that little, what a horse can on that level? Because we see so many conflicts because riders and horses do not understand each other. So when we on an earlier level would teach the horse the age, we would be without all these conflicts. Of course, the rider must know the age that the horse knows, otherwise it doesn't make sense. And every aid must be taught to the horse like a letter in the alphabet. And there can be some letters that are more difficult for a horse to understand, like a legasthenic who have problems, for example, with the difference between a B and a P, or so on, that there are things that might be difficult. And they have carefully then to be taught to the horse. And first, when the horse understands them, then it makes sense to see if you can combine it with one person from down, showing the horse the way it's used to, one from up doing the same thing, and then little by little taking the person on the ground away. That was also the principle that it has been like in better schools for centuries, but I just wanted that the horse understood even more than just left, right, stop and go.
Where did that get? That's just my why you're talking and my head pops up. Where did that get lost? Because before I've met you, nobody ever taught me how to send a horse out on the circle line, for example.
Yeah.
So there was always this getting the horse tired and then, yeah.
Yeah. We had the higher school. So when we, for example, see Privinel, before a man was sitting on a horse, the horse could do all exercises between the pillars in standing, walk on the place, trot on the place, canter on the place. And then the first they put a man on it. And in some schools, they even had that education before the launching. So the horse was very high educated before they started to carry a man. So they were educated for the purpose carrying a person and understanding what the person did. But that was, of course, very expensive. It cost years to educate a horse for a king. So somebody with less economy got transported. And therefore, there has always been these two ways of riding for the commoner, that they are just transported, and then for the nobility that want a little more. The difference you can see in equerry, you want a horse just to go straight, and the man with the bow and arrow must be able to turn around and shoot backwards. Or when you are with a sword, you want to be in a narrow combat, and the whole horse must use exactly where you can touch your opponent. If you're just 10 centimeters too far away, your sword is not dangerous. You have to be exactly where you can hit your opponent. And therefore, we have these two kind of riding all the way back already at the time of Xenophon in the 4th century before Christ. Also, the two different seats are described. The short leg, still not with a short stirrup, because that didn't exist in Greece at that time. And with a long leg, where you take the whole horse in between your legs and conduct them rather with your upper legs. So this higher level of educating a horse has always been a privilege. And the most fantastic thing is that normal people like we nowadays are so privileged that we can afford to educate a horse.
One of the things that also made it so privileged and so expensive to educate a horse is that in earlier times, we see that at least on the pictures from Pluvinel, that we had one person who was responsible for one aid. So there were five people walking around the horse, somebody responsible for the head, somebody responsible for an inside and outside rein, inside and outside leg, and they needed to communicate.
Yes. And that means that everybody knew what the other one was doing.
And everybody could also interpret what the horse was doing.
Yes, and everybody knew the goal, and everybody knew the journey to that goal.
And that is, of course, you have a lot of man hours, both in the educational process and then also in the educational process of the horse, which is not realistic if we don't live in royal societies with these huge academies. But then you came up with actually a much better idea. And how are we doing that today? How are we framing the horse today in Groundwork?
Instead of having person standing on both sides of the horse, we are, for example, teaching the horse an outside aid. And we must also remember, we only frame a horse until we reach the basic balance. When it's in there, the frame is not necessary anymore. So if the horse is heavy on a frame, it's not in the frame. It's fallen against that frame. So to have a horse in between the aids doesn't mean that you press all of them onto the horse. You just take the one that the horse is leaning onto and say, could you move your weight off that leg? So if the horse, for example, falls on the right front leg, you have with the right rein, for example, if the horse is less bended, in that case, the outside rein, to ask the horse, could you take yourself off that front leg? And if the horse can, the aid is done. But we must, of course, see if the horse, does it understand the aid and does it have the physical ability to do it different? When the horse is standing, it can take the weight off a right front leg with a left front leg. But in trot, for example, that's not possible because then the left front leg is in the air. Then the horse can only take the weight off the right front foot with the help of the left hind foot. And that means that the left hind foot must be enough educated to take the weight from that right front foot. And some horses can do that from nature. That's real riding horses. Like, for example, my youngster, Hogareño, who's now 3 years old, I tell him, take the weight off that shoulder and say, okay, I'll take it off the shoulder. While other horses, the hind leg has to go through years of education to be able to take that weight. So you must also understand that horses, even with low physical ability, can be very intelligent. They can learn the aid, but it doesn't make sense to ask the horse to do something it can't. You must be aware of the ability of that horse, and the horse has to do it, and the horse has to understand it.
And that was a part of the revolutionary setup with that you came up there. You were eventually moving the educator in front of the horse head, using a cabezon, and then using the whip as a signal for teaching the horse, if I'm touching you here, or if I'm pointing with the whip here, then it's an inside rein. It has the meaning of an inside rein. When I'm touching you here, it has the meaning of an inside leg. And this is an outside leg, and this is an outside rein. Moving the horse into this frame, balancing it up, and then even going so far or trusting the intelligence of a horse and a man so far that we are only using visual cues eventually.
Yes. Yeah. There's a little trap, which is also a quality, body language. So, of course, we want a body language from the human, but horses can be so good on body language that people do not notice that they didn't really get the secondary aid. And when you sit on the horse, the secondary aid must be done in a way that you can do them exactly the same way from up. So the body language, when you go backwards in the front of a horse, is like another horse going in the front of that horse. And you can go faster, you can go slower, you can go in direction, and the horse will follow you like a foal puts its head to the stomach of its mother. And to replace the mother, first with your body and later with a hand, is a very important thing. People have the weird idea that they put a piece of metal in the mouth of a horse and the horse shall understand it. How? So it must be taught to the horse that there's a frame there in the front, and that it is going forward to the giving hand is like you moving backwards in the front of the horse, inviting the horse to come to you, not pulling it, but inviting it to come to you. And in the beginning, it's your body who says, here's the frame. Of course, it's important that you are moving fast enough that you don't ruin the basic gaits of the horse. So you will have to understand what is the basic gait of that horse, that you don't frame it more than it makes sense for that horse to be framed.
And we also, that is also a part that I'm still, you know, the more I'm talking to people outside the academic bubble, the more I'm understanding, it doesn't go without saying. So for other people, this is not as normal as for us that you're educating wars like this. We can change the position of the man. We can change the position of the rider from in front of the head, for example, to next to the shoulder into a working hand position. And the
Yes,
aids are still understood.
when we have replaced the body language with another signal, when I have replaced my body in the front with teaching the horse the hand, like first, second, and third hold, or standing and bending, and so on. If I replaced my body language with my hand, then I can take my body somewhere else. If I have replaced the inside leg with a signal from the whip, then I can take my body somewhere else. So when the horse understands it, then it doesn't matter from what direction you come, if you're in the front of the horse, behind the horse, on the inside or the outside, where you put your body, your aid will always be stronger just by being there with your body. And therefore, I would typically put my body where the horse has the biggest problems with understanding, or the next step I would like to teach that horse. And in the beginning, it would, with many horses being in the front of it, if the horse is a little bigger, have bigger gaits, then I might start rather being on the side of it.
Let's go back to longing, because this is where the transition to longing comes. The better the understanding is, the more distance we can create in between us, and then eventually we call it longing.
Yes.
Yes. So very, very simple. He says just yes.
Yes.
But instead of chasing a horse onto a circle, we can not only give it shape, we can even go to higher exercises eventually.
Yeah, one of the game changers on the way to our work now was the halt from behind. So in the moment that I can stop a horse by the whip from behind, asking the hind legs to go in under the horse, participating in deceleration, we had even a very important game changer, an extra tool to build up a horse much more soft and with much more concern of what the goals are. So in the moment where we could only use a hand to stop the horse with, we would put it on the shoulders, and the horse had to stop with the front legs, and often the hind quarter would continue to run. But the ability in framing even from behind, and framing from outside and inside, and from the front and wherever you were, also enabled us to put the requirements to that horse more in the front and see what do this horse need. Is the horse we need more forward? Then it makes sense to go a smaller circle yourself, having the horse on a bigger circle that you are not so tired. So I cannot really run backwards in a canter before the horse is very, very high educated. So it makes sense to have more distance to the horse being on a smaller circle. And the important was that we could keep up communication. And many of my pupils did even a step further and went to liberty and kept the communication just by body signals and working with the horse in that way. And I think that's beautiful. To me, liberty is not using tools. To me, liberty is not need them.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. We will talk later with Marius about that. This is such a fantastic development that we are seeing. They're going further and further and further in education, and also allowing the horse to have a voice and allowing the horse to say, no, I can't do this. I don't understand this. I can't do this. I'm falling out of the frame. I'm falling out of balance. And being able as a rider or as a person standing there to interpret what is going on, that the horse is not naughty, but that it is lacking balance, maybe, or training, or the circle is too small, or whatever it might be. And this is also one of the great achievements within the academic art of riding that I sometimes think we don't stress that enough, because for us it's so normal that horses are having a voice and are allowed to take control over their body and give a feedback what they are doing there.
Yes.
Yes, it's just
Now, when you educate someone, never mind if a human or a horse or whatever, it's also finding the qualities of that individual. And the character is a part of that quality. Do we have a very calm horse or a nervous horse? Or do we have a good balance between energy and calmness? What is it for a horse that you are just educating? And when you have a horse that is more nervous, you must work calmer. If you have a horse that is too calm, you must work a little more energetic. So already there, it's well known since hundreds of years that we have to work every horse different. When you have a lot of the same horses, for example, in a cavalry regiment, they got all the chestnut from 1 meter 62 in that regiment. Then you could think that education was uniform, because all the horses were very much like each other. But when we work with Shetland ponies and Shire horses and everything in between, then we will have to find out how different horses are to be able to educate them in the best way for that horse.
And that is something that is super, super important also in my experience when we are talking about rehabilitation. Because we know from science that when we are that pain and how pain is experienced in a body has a lot to do with expectation and a lot to do with stress. Meaning if we can, from the way we are educating a horse, take away stress instead of adding stress, would make the horse's life a lot easier, even if we are having a body that is maybe not perfect.
Yeah, I think when we get a little more into studying the central nerve system, we will discover that stress is not only a mental thing. And we see many stress-related diseases, of course. And the opposite way around, when you have broken a leg, of course, you put plaster on that it grows together, but afterwards you have to retrain. Otherwise, you stay crippled. So that retraining and building up again has to be done in a way that fits to that body. And not only to your expectations of, I want to do jumping or trotting or whatever. Of course, a trotter is perhaps bred to be a trotter, so that might rehabilitate beyond trotting, but it's not sure.
Yeah, but also there that the way you are asking the question. So if you're going there with your expectation and saying, and now you have to go trotting again, or if you're standing there and teach the horse an aid and ask kindly, could you please? Could you try? Could you please? Makes a huge difference in how the nervous system is reacting. And is giving you such a benefit for education, oh, and
And also
rehabilitation.
that the horse shows it understand it, because a movement is not only muscles or the binding tissues moving something, it's the central nerve system and combined with a knowledge. So a movement you are aware of, if different in something you just do by habit.
And that is what we eventually would like to reach, right? That something we are teaching new becomes a habit, and we are getting more and more balance without working for it.
Yes, because a habit can be a good habit or a bad habit. And therefore, in the academic art, one of the goals is that you can ride the horse mainly by the seat. Okay, Privenel says only by the seat, but until now, I would say mainly by the seat. And that means that the horse must be in balance with the point where a rider can sit. And that's because perhaps not the natural balance point of that horse. So the horse has to rethink its own balance. Also, when a horse goes uphill or downhill, it has to take another shape to get balance in that situation. So therefore, it's not impossible for the horse to find its balance somewhere else in the body, but they will, for some horses, be very, very difficult. But some horses are very, very bad balanced from nature. And then having that goal helps them a lot in being a horse, not only a riding horse.
Yeah. And there you are just Just in a side sentence, you're always mentioning the gold nuggets because for you it's also, of course, that the balance we are training on the ground, we are taking up into the saddle then. So the process is continuing, and we don't have the split of we are doing something on the ground and then we are jumping up and doing something else. It's a natural evolution.
Yes, everything builds on basic, but basic is only basic when it's basic for something. And therefore, it's important to understand that something. So you must have a definition in what am I educating towards?
And when we are doing academic art of riding, for many of us, not for all of us, for
No.
we have this goal of going towards higher schools. This is your goal for sure. It was when I have a healthy horse, it's my goal for sure. Going towards higher schools, going towards Livard, going towards Piaf. But for the benefit of the horse and not only for doing a show exercise. Other people are having different goals, which is fine. But the longer we are talking, I think the more it's getting understandable and also visible that it is beneficial to have an idea about higher schools when we want to educate even a horse on a lower level.
Yes, because when you have a low goal, you can have the goal turning left, turning right, forward, slow, faster, slower, stop. But then you need a horse that is so strong that it can easily do it. So we see many horses worn out when your goals are too low, and many horses worn out if you have wrong higher goals. This is both a problem. So the art is to take that horse into more ability beyond its mental and physically ability. And when I take up higher goals, it's rather for my pupil that they are getting better and better in understanding what they are doing. So the higher goals they can fulfill, the better they get in making the basics. So for every horse, even today when I start a youngster, I think if I'd just been as good with the last horse I educated. So it's every time you get further in your life, you get even better in basic.
Yeah, that is a nice sentence to wrap this up for today. Otherwise, we will have a 5-hour podcast because we are coming from
Right. So
we are continuing to talk about that another time. I'm looking forward to listening a whole weekend to you on Christmas again, 21st, 22nd. We are very close to Christmas. This year, we have the traditional Christmas webinar. Our topic this year is, of course, from the ground. And I'm not sure how that is for people who are listening to us. But for me, the truth is, each time I'm having a problem with in the education of my horse, what I'm doing is getting down to the ground and looking at what have I missed, what have I, where is the piece of the puzzle that doesn't fit, and then I'm repairing it or explaining it better, and then I'm trying to do the same from the saddle again. Groundwork, launch work, the way we are understanding it and explaining it is for each level. It's not only
Yeah,
for the beginner, it's for each
it's
level.
from the beginner, but you will return to it. And even when you educate a Piaf, it makes sense to take part of that education from the ground.
And it's also fantastic if we have riders, for example, who are having problems in their own body to still give the horse gymnastical exercises
Yes, or
without
if
sitting on
your
it.
horse is not a horse not suitable for riding, you might have my mini ponies that you don't want to ride, or a horse with other health
Issues.
problem, where you say, yeah, but it shall not just be meat on legs standing around. You can still spend very interesting time with that horse, and there's so much you can learn from that horse still.
Yeah, and when we have a fence around horses, we need to give them some kind of mental entertainment.
Yes, I think it is a very fantastic time that we are living in, where we can afford to have horses. But then it's a pity when we don't use it and really do something interesting with them. So it can be nice if you just go for a walk with your horse in the forest, or I like coaching, and there's so many things with horses I like. But as I got into the art, that is the most fascinating thing I've ever done with horses, and therefore I'm just spending a lifetime doing it.
Yeah, it's a nice way of spending time together. And I can see, I've always been saying, when I was living in Germany or in Sweden, we had small facilities, and then in the relationship in between me and my horses was depending on what we did together in the arena,
Yes.
how we did things together. Now life is different, and now the horses are running free in the mountains. And what is so nice for me to see, or a confirmation, is that my horses are still coming home every morning for their work time, and they still want to spend time with me in the riding. So maybe it's not all wrong that I'm doing. So let's wrap this up here. I'm looking forward to your course. I'm looking forward, we will link it in the show notes. I'm looking forward to repeat a podcast with you for another topic. But for now, I'm saying thank you
You're
for
welcome.
today, and see you soon.
See you.
Thank you for listening. I hope this episode helps you to get a little curious about groundwork. There's really no reason why you shouldn't start doing it wherever you're going with your horse, if you're just interested in the pedagogical setup, or if you are interested in developing gymnastical exercises and develop your horse forward further. There's always a reason to start doing groundwork, and you will come back to it like I did it during my life again and again and again, and develop a new perspective. In the show notes, we have linked you the Equidemia Groundwork course that you can get. We also have linked you the book about groundwork that we made. And we have a special surprise for you. We have a webinar with Ben at the end of December. It's perfect. Cuddle up in front of your fireplace or cozy on the sofa just before Christmas and watch everything around groundwork. The topic is From the Ground for 2 days, and learn more about how to spend time well with your horses. I hope to see you there. Bye.